Eugénie Grandet by Honoré de Balzac. Chapter 1. There are houses in certain provincial towns whose aspect inspires melancholy, akin to that called forth by somber cloisters, dreary moorlands, or the desolation of ruins. Within these houses there is, perhaps, the silence of the cloister, the barrenness of moors, the skeleton of ruins. Life and movement are so stagnant there that a stranger might think them uninhabited, were it not that he encounters suddenly the pale, cold glance of a motionless person, whose half-monastic face peers beyond the window casing at the sound of an unaccustomed step. Such elements of sadness form the physiognomy, as it were, of a dwelling house in Saumur which stands at the end of the steep street leading to the chateau in the upper part of the town. This street, now little frequented, hot in summer, cold in winter, dark in certain sections, is remarkable for the resonance of its little pebbly pavement, always clean and dry, for the narrowness of its tortuous roadway, for the peaceful stillness of its houses, which belong to the old town and are overtopped by the ramparts. Houses 3 centuries old are still solid, though built of wood, and their diverse aspects add to the originality which commends this portion of Saumur to the attention of artists and antiquaries. It is difficult to pass these houses without admiring the enormous oaken beams, their ends carved into fantastic figures, which crown with a black bas-relief the lower floor of most of them. In one place, these transverse timbers are covered with slate and mark a bluish line along the frail wall of a dwelling covered by a roof and colombiage which bends beneath the weight of years, and whose rotting shingles are twisted by the alternate action of sun and rain. In another place, blackened, worn-out windowsills, with delicate sculptures now scarcely discernible, seem too weak to bear the brown clay pots from which springs the heartsease or the rosebush of some poor working woman. Farther on are doors studded with enormous nails, where the genius of our forefathers has traced domestic hieroglyphics, of which the meaning is now lost forever. Here a Protestant attested his belief. There a leaguer cursed Henry IV. Elsewhere some bourgeois has carved the insignia of his noblesse de cloches, symbols of his long-forgotten magisterial glory. The whole history of France is there. Next to a tottering house with roughly plastered walls, where an artisan enshrines his tools, rises the mansion of a country gentleman, on the stone arch of which above the door vestiges of armorial bearings may still be seen, battered by the many revolutions that have shaken France since 1789. In this hilly street, the ground floors of the merchants are neither shops nor warehouses. Lovers of the Middle Ages will here find the overwear of our forefathers in all its naive simplicity. These low rooms, which have no shop frontage, no show windows, in fact no glass at all, are deep and dark and without interior or exterior decoration. Their doors open in two parts, each roughly iron-bound. The upper half is fastened back within the room, the lower half, fitted with a spring bell, swings continually to and fro. Air and light reach the damp den within, either through the upper half of the door, or through an open space between the ceiling and a low front wall, breast high, which is closed by solid shutters that are taken down every morning, put up every evening, and held in place by heavy iron bars. This wall serves as a counter for the merchandise. No delusive display is there, only samples of the business, whatever it may chance to be, such, for instance, as 3 or 4 tubs full of codfish and salt, a few bundles of sailcloth, cordage, copper wire hanging from the joists above, iron hoops for casks ranged along the wall, or a few pieces of cloth upon the shelves. Enter. A neat girl, glowing with youth, wearing a white kerchief, her arms red and bare, drops her knitting and calls her father or her mother, one of whom comes forward and sells you what you want, phlegmatically, civilly, or arrogantly, according to his or her individual character, whether it be a matter of 2 sous or 20,000 francs worth of merchandise. You may see a cooper, for instance, sitting in his doorway and twirling his thumbs as he talks with a neighbor. To all appearance, he owns nothing more than a few miserable boat ribs and 2 or 3 bundles of laths, but below in the port his teeming woodyard supplies all the cooperage trade of Anjou. He knows to a plank how many casks are needed if the vintage is good. A hot season makes him rich, a rainy season ruins him. in a single morning, pensions worth 11 francs have been known to drop to 6. In this country, as in Turin, atmospheric vicissitudes control commercial life. Wine growers, proprietors, wood merchants, coopers, innkeepers, mariners, all keep watch of the sun. They tremble when they go to bed lest they should hear in the morning of a frost in the night.